Section 2, Independence for Texas, An American Story. In July 1821, Stephen F. Austin set off from Louisiana for the Texas Territory in the northeastern corner of Mexico. The Spanish government had promised to give his father, Moses, a huge tract of Texas land if the elder Austin settled 300 American families there. Moses died before he could fulfill his end of the deal. On his deathbed, he asked Stephen to take his place in Texas. Austin was favorably impressed with the region. As he surveyed the land grant between the Brazos and Colorado rivers, he noted its natural abundance. The prairie comes bluff to the river and affords a most beautiful situation for a town or settlement. The country is as good in every respect as man could wish for. Land all first rate, plenty of timber, fine water, beautifully rolling. Quoted in Stephen F. Austin, Empresario of Texas. Opening Texas to Americans. When Austin settled in Texas, it was not a wild and empty land. Long a part of Spain's Mexican colony, the area was under Mexican control after the country achieved independence from Spain in 1821. The Spanish-speaking inhabitants of the area, called Tejanos, had established such settlements as San Antonio de Bejar and Hidalgo in the southern portion of the region. Few Tejanos lived north of these settlements. That area was the territory of the Apache, Comanche, and other Native American groups. Unable to persuade its own citizens to move closer to the Native American groups, Mexico decided to continue Spanish policy and invite Americans and other foreigners to settle there. Between 1823 and 1825, Mexico passed three colonization laws, which offered cheap land to nearly anyone willing to come. The last law granted new immigrants a 10-year exemption from paying taxes, but required that they become Mexican citizens, lived under Mexican law, and convert to Roman Catholicism. Empresarios and settlers. Although some American immigrants headed to Texas on their own, most came at the encouragement of empresarios, a Spanish word meaning agents or contractors. Under the National Colonization Act, Mexico gave 26 empresarios large grants of Texas land. In exchange, the empresarios promised to fill it with a certain number of settlers. The empresarios assigned a plot to each family and governed the colonies they established. Stephen Austin was not only the first, but also by far the most successful empresario. He founded the town of Washington on the Brazos, and by the mid-1830s had persuaded some 1,500 American families to immigrate. Americanizing Texas. The Americans who emigrated to Texas initially accepted Mexican citizenship as required. The government assumed they would also adopt Mexican customs and come to see Mexico as their own country, but for various reasons few did. The Spanish Catholic Church was alien to the traditions of most American settlers, and only a few bothered to learn Spanish. Many Mexicans, in turn, distrusted the new settlers because of their American lifestyle and dismissal of Mexican ways. The Mexicans' unease increased in 1826 when Empresario Hayden Edwards' brother, Benjamin, led a rebellion against Mexican authority. Angry over disagreements about whether the Mexican government or the empresario controlled the region, Edwards declared that the settlements of Americans in Texas now constituted the independent nation of Fredonia. He gained few followers, however, and Stephen Austin led a contingent of troops that helped Mexico crush the revolt. Although nearly all of the settlers ignored Edwards' call for a revolution, the Mexican government feared that it signaled an American plot to acquire Texas. In 1830, Mexico closed its borders to further immigration by Americans and banned the import of enslaved labor as well. Mexico also placed taxes on goods imported from foreign countries, hoping to discourage trade with the United States. These new laws infuriated the settlers. Without immigration, their settlements could not grow. The import tax meant higher prices for goods they were accustomed to purchasing from the United States. Perhaps worst of all, the Mexican government was telling them what they could and could not do. They saw no reason to follow the orders of a government they hardly considered their own. Reading check. Examining. What did Mexico's colonization laws offer people willing to settle in northern Texas, and what did the laws require of these settlers? Texas goes to war. With tension simmering, settlers met at two conventions in the Texas town of San Felipe in 1832 and 1833. They chose Stephen Austin as president of the first convention. The convention asked Mexico to reopen Texas to American immigrants and to loosen the taxes on imports. The second convention in 1833 was more aggressive. At that time, Texas was part of the Mexican state of Coahuila. The convention recommended separating Texas from Coahuila and creating a new Mexican state. The convention also created a constitution for the new state and designated Austin to travel to Mexico City to negotiate with the Mexican government. In the fall of 1833, the negotiations stalled, and an irritated Austin sent a letter to Tejano leaders in San Antonio that suggested Texas should start peacefully organizing its own state government. Mexican officials intercepted the letter. After sending the letter, Austin managed to persuade President Antonio López de Santa Anna to agree to several demands, including lifting the hated immigration ban. On January 3, 1834, as Austin was returning home, officials arrested him for treason on the basis of the intercepted letter. The Mexican officials took Austin back to Mexico City and threw him in jail, where he languished without trial until he was released in July 1835. Shortly after Austin was imprisoned in April 1834, President Santa Anna abruptly denounced Mexico's Constitution of 1824 and made himself dictator. Even Austin, finally released from prison, now saw that negotiation with Santa Anna was impossible. In September 1835, he concluded that war was inevitable. He urged Texans to organize an army, which they quickly did. The early battles. The Texan army faced a Mexican army with serious problems. Continuing political instability in Mexico City had denied the army sound leadership, training, and support. Against this handicapped force, the Texan army enjoyed its first taste of victory at the military post of Gonzales, about 75 miles east of San Antonio. There, Mexican soldiers ordered the Texans to surrender their arms. In response, the rebels pointed a cannon at the Mexican force and held up a cloth sign painted with the taunt, "Come and take it." Having no orders to attack, the Mexicans retreated to San Antonio, and the Texans followed them. The rebels, numbering only about 350, drove the much larger Mexican force out of San Antonio in December 1835. Despite these early successes, the Texans faced tremendous difficulties of their own. Few of the men had any military training, and no one could agree at first on who should lead them. Finally, a former governor of Tennessee and proven military leader named Sam Houston took command. In the meantime, Santa Anna organized a force of about 6,000 troops to put down the rebellion. The Alamo. When Santa Anna's forces arrived at San Antonio in February 1836, they found over 180 rebels holed up in an abandoned Spanish Catholic mission called the Alamo. Under the command of Lieutenant Colonel William B. Travis, the small force sought to delay Santa Anna and give Houston's army more time to prepare. From within the mission, Travis dispatched a courier through Mexican lines with a plea to fellow Texans and U.S. citizens for help. "I call on you in the name of liberty, of patriotism, and everything dear to American character, to come to our aid with all dispatch. Though this call may be neglected, I am determined to sustain myself as long as possible and die like a soldier." Victory or death. Quoted in History of Texas. The call for reinforcements went almost unanswered. Only 32 settlers from Gonzales, deciding on their own to join the fight, made it into the Alamo. Running low on ammunition and gunpowder, the Texans held off Santa Anna's besieging army for 13 days. During the standoff, the new Texas government met at Washington on the Brazos and formally declared independence from Mexico. On March 6, 1836, Santa Anna's army stormed the Alamo. The Texans fought off the attackers for 6 hours, killing or wounding about 600 before being overrun. Although the defenders of the Alamo had been defeated, they had bought Houston's army nearly 2 extra weeks to organize. Goliad. 2 weeks later, the Mexican army overwhelmed Texan troops led by James W. Fannin at Goliad, a town southeast of San Antonio near the Gulf Coast. Fannin and his men surrendered, hoping the Mexicans would disarm them and expel them from Texas. Though the Mexican field general at Goliad wrote to Santa Anna requesting clemency, Santa Anna demanded execution.
At dawn on March 27th, a firing squad executed more than 300 men. The losses at the Alamo and Goliad devastated Texans, but also united them behind their new country. Turning point. The Battle of San Jacinto. With the Texan army in disarray, Sam Houston desperately needed time to recruit fresh volunteers and to train the soldiers who remained. Rather than fight, he chose to retreat, heading east toward Louisiana. Houston was biding his time. Up against a larger, more disciplined army, he decided to wait for Santa Anna to make a mistake. Such a mistake occurred on April 21st, when both armies were encamped along the San Jacinto River, near what is now the city of Houston. Santa Anna no longer saw Houston's army as a threat, so he allowed his men to sleep in the afternoon, confident that Houston would wait until the next day to launch an attack. Eager for a fight, Houston's soldiers convinced the officers to launch an afternoon assault. Shielded from sight by a hill, Houston's troops crept up on Santa Anna's sleeping soldiers and charged. The surprise attack threw the Mexicans into a panic. The Battle of San Jacinto lasted less than 20 minutes, but the killing continued for hours. Yelling, "Remember the Alamo and remember Goliad," Houston's men attacked the Mexican troops with guns, knives, and clubs. In addition to the hundreds killed, over 700 members of Santa Anna's force were taken captive. The Texans suffered only 9 killed and 34 wounded. Among the captured was Santa Anna himself. Houston forced Santa Anna to order his army out of Texas and sign a treaty recognizing independence for the Republic of Texas. The Mexican Congress refused to accept the treaty, but was unwilling to launch another military campaign. Texas had won the war. The Republic of Texas. In September 1836, the newly independent republic called its citizens to the polls. They elected Sam Houston as their first president and voted 3,277-91 in favor of annexation or becoming part of the United States. As proud as they may have been of the republic, even the earliest settlers still regarded themselves as Americans. Given that Americans had enthusiastically supported the war, most Texans assumed the United States would want to annex the republic. Many northern members of Congress, however, opposed admitting Texas as a slave state. President Andrew Jackson did not want to increase the tensions between North and South, nor did he want to risk a costly war with Mexico, which continued to claim ownership of Texas. Jackson made no move toward annexation, though on his last day in office he did sign a resolution officially recognizing Texas as an independent nation. Reading check. Summarizing. What difficulties did the Texans face in their war against Mexico? Social Studies Skill Builder. Understanding latitude and longitude. Why learn this skill? Mapmakers use lines of latitude and longitude to pinpoint locations on maps and globes. Understanding these lines and what they signify will help you locate any place on a map, around the corner or around the world. Learning the skill. The imaginary horizontal lines that circle the globe from east to west are called lines of latitude. Because the distance between the lines of latitude is always the same, they are also called parallels. The imaginary vertical lines that intersect the parallels are lines of longitude, also called meridians. Parallels and meridians are numbered in degrees. The equator, located halfway between the north and south poles, is at 0 degrees. Moving north or south of the equator, the number of degrees increases until reaching 90 degrees north or 90 degrees south latitude at the poles. The prime meridian is at 0 degrees longitude. Moving east or west of the prime meridian, the number of degrees east or west increases up to 180 degrees. The 180 degree line of longitude is located on the opposite side of the globe from the prime meridian and is called the international date line. The point at which parallels and meridians intersect is the grid address or coordinates of an exact location. The coordinates for Salt Lake City, for example, are 41 degrees north latitude and 112 degrees west longitude. Practicing the skill. Analyze the information on the map on this page and then answer the questions. 1. What are the approximate coordinates of Fort Victoria? 2. At what line of latitude was the Oregon country divided between the United States and Britain? How many degrees south would you need to go from there to reach the South Pole? 3. What geographic feature lies at about 42 degrees north and 109 degrees west? 4. The United States originally wanted Oregon's northern border to be between 54 degrees and 55 degrees north. Does the 1846 boundary lie north or south of this boundary? By approximately how many degrees?